We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
You know, people, we spend a lot of time on the Higher Side Chats dissecting the infinite layers of corruption within our government, and 20 days before the national election, on the heels of the propaganda machine we call a debate, the illusion of choice has never been clearer. But the chorus line of corporate media has many tricks, and maybe our cynicism allows us to fall victim to a different lie. The lie that there's no third choice. Yet on every ballot in the country, there is a ticket that MSNBC and Fox News won't tell you about, and for me, that's a very telling sign they just might be the right choice. Today's insanely special guest is here to make that case, a former Superior Court judge in the great state of California and the vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian ticket. Running mate of Governor Gary Johnson, he is literally the man with the plan, Judge Jim Gray. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Greg. It's always good to be with good people, and unfortunately, I agree with your assessment. we really do have the answers. We really do have the most qualified person to be president of the United States that I know of, and Governor Gary Johnson, more administrative experience at this moment than both Governor Romney and President Obama combined. I'm proud to be his running mate, and you can ask me any question you want, and I have kind of a defect, in effect, as a candidate, because I'll tell you the truth. I'm just too old to change. So let's do this thing, and we'll just talk serious things.
Perfect. Yeah, so let's just dive in and start with a question that I know would probably make Mitt Romney wet himself, but I know you're comfortable with it, and that is, simply put, the Higher Side Chats audience really likes two things: exposing corruption and marijuana. Why would they vote for Gary Johnson and Jim Gray?
Well, let me count the ways. again, put aside our qualifications, because Governor Johnson actually is so much more qualified than Barack Obama, who's actually been president for 3-and-something years,
right.
More than George Romney as well. He has practical experience. He was a very successful, highly successful governor of New Mexico. And honestly, I am more qualified than Joe Biden, who's actually been president for 3-and-something years as well. Paul Ryan hasn't even had a job outside of the government since he graduated from college. Biden hasn't been outside of government since the 1970s. You lose touch. I was in the Peace Corps. I'll be the first Peace Corps volunteer to be elected to national office, and I'm proud of that. And the only one of the six of us running for president or vice president to serve in the military. I think that brings a real perspective. I was a federal prosecutor in Los Angeles, trial court judge in Orange County for 25 years, and I think that all of that brings things to the table. But not only that, we really have as our watchword, our slogan for the campaign is, good government is easy, watch. And that's what Governor Gary Johnson has done. And so I met him because he took a very public stand against our nation's drug policy back in 1999, and as a sitting governor, said he held his audit, as he called it, found out that the war on drugs is not working, and took the public airwaves, said that was a fact. I didn't have any constituency to do that, took some heat for it, but it was the right thing to do, and that's what he did. And he did turn things around in New Mexico, put a needle exchange program, stopped the arrest of nonviolent drug offenders to a major degree. Of course, I had done the same thing in 1992, so holding a press conference saying our nation's war on drugs isn't working. So we share that. In fact, we endorse those three initiatives in Colorado, Washington, and Oregon to treat marijuana like alcohol. For heaven's sake, that's the way to go. Treat hemp like cotton, for heaven's sakes. Again, it's just so abundantly clear. But it's money, Greg. It's money. In fact, I had two sitting congressmen from Orange County, Republicans, tell me years ago, Jim, you don't understand. Most people in Washington realize the war on drugs is not winnable, but it's eminently fundable, and they're addicted to the drug war funding. So we've got to go over the heads of Congress to the people. We are. We're making progress. And anybody that wants, for example, to have a medical marijuana clinic survive in the next year or two, the only hope is Governor Gary Johnson. You can elect Romney, you can elect Obama. They're not going to have any medical marijuana dispensaries in the country within a year or two. In fact, Romney and Obama are so close together on so many things. We call them Robomney. They're almost interchangeable. Keeping our military in conflicts all around the world. It just goes on and on. We say, we're not going to attack anybody. We're not going to be at war with anybody unless they attack us or our allies. So there's so many parallels between Romney and Obama, and we're on the other side. I mean, I can go on and on, which I have been doing, I guess, for a few minutes, but it's so vividly true that I'm proud to be the running mate of this guy. He's the right guy, and we're going to get this thing on.
Can you explain how, although Obama frames himself as soft on weed by saying he's inhaled and he does these little skits with Harold and Kumar for the DNC, but in reality, the past 4 years have gotten actually tougher for marijuana users. Isn't that true?
Yes, indeed. Oh, my goodness sakes. And he even acknowledged in his book that he used marijuana regularly when he was working in Chicago. In fact, he even acknowledged in his book that he used cocaine. And now, and then, of course, he had his Attorney General, Eric Holder, who issued that memorandum, which I really took encouragement with, saying, you know, we're not going to use federal resources to arrest, convict anyone for medical marijuana as long as they're in compliance with state and local law, which I found refreshing and appropriate. Now, of course, they're really attacking even some of the best of the medical marijuana dispensaries because he's lost control of his government or for whatever reason. Yes, we have an arrest for marijuana every 43 seconds in our country. Every 43 seconds, and 85% of those arrests are from simple or for only possession. And it's just disgusting. It's outrageous. We're spending resources on this when it literally we could and should be spending them on robbery, rape, and murder. And so, and really, this is the thing, Greg, that pushed me over to come out publicly against this. The tougher we get with regard to nonviolent drug offenses, literally the softer we get with regard to the prosecution of things like robbery, rape, and murder, because we only have so many resources in the criminal justice system. Let's spend the money to take those out of commission that are causing us harm. It's absolutely outrageous. We're going to change it, and they're not.
Amen. You know, and I've seen a lot of videos online, and you've written a book where you talk about the failings of drug prohibition, which is great, and I encourage everyone to seek that stuff out. But I wanted to ask you some questions that I don't hear asked, but are important to me. For example, how do you feel about Julian Assange and Bradley Manning and the situation that occurred there?
Well, it's just no different particularly than any of these other things. We simply we're hypocritical. We're simply using resources and squandering them. We need to hold people accountable for their actions, and Governor Gary Johnson and I believe that. But you know, squandering these things on other things, just like these cases, is simply contrary to reason, contrary to what people should do with their critically important discretion in the entire justice system.
It bothers me because currently it seems like secrecy is more important than morality within our government. So if you were to expose something immoral, you know, you're going to spend your life in a dark hole somewhere and no one's going to hear about you. Do you think that whistleblowers should have some type of protection?
Absolutely. You know, the answer, of course, is yes. You just have to focus. I've been in the criminal justice system, and I'm a prosecutor, criminal defense attorney, judge. Bureaucracies are really, really good at one thing, and that is increasing the size, the power, the control of bureaucracies. And that's where we're going. And it's just outrageous, really, as we as citizens see what our government is doing. And you can go back to Thomas Jefferson, a hero of mine, who said, you know, if you have the people afraid of their government, that's tyranny. But mm-hmm. if you have the government afraid of the people, that's democracy. Craig, guess where we are today? The government continues to have us intentionally, continues to have us live in fear. And they're pushing that. It's for their own benefit, but certainly not for ours. We're going to a police state. We are in a tyranny situation. We need to gather back and reclaim the soul of the United States of America, which is our freedoms and our liberties. And our soul is under attack for so many reasons by our very own government. And it's just something that the founding fathers would probably take up arms against us. We're really, really giving away our liberties without much of a fight. Shame on us. Shame on us eternally.
I agree. I mean, well, we did see a spike in protesting and activism this year with the Occupy movement, which was mocked by the media, ignored by the leaders, and eradicated by an aggressive police force. But well, what are your thoughts on the Occupy protests, and how would you guys have handled it, you and Gary Johnson, if you were in office?
Well, we are so much in line with so many different movements. The Ron Paul movement, yes. The Tea Party movement, in addition. The Occupy movements as well. Why? Well, because we really would, for example, do away with crony capitalism. You know, the idea of the government paying people not to raise corn, paying oil companies to drill for oil, you know, all of this stuff, it's simply not within the libertarian tradition whatsoever. That certainly appeals to the Occupy movements, to the Tea Party, all of these folks. That's what we do. The military, you know, putting our military in harm's way, spending all of this money in Afghanistan. We would bring out our troops from Afghanistan now. That appeals, of course, to these other groups that I'm talking about. And it just goes on. This war on drugs, the war on marijuana, we would endorse. In fact, we will have on the ballot, I'm assured, in California in 2014, an initiative to treat marijuana like wine. That certainly appeals to so many of these other groups. Uh-huh. I was a federal prosecutor, as I said, in Los Angeles. Ended up heading a unit prosecuting frauds against the government, the FHA, VA. I prosecuted a lot of bank vice presidents. Governor Gary Johnson and I believe in responsibility at all levels of society. And the higher position of trust, the higher position of responsibility, the higher standard you should be held to. That's what we believe. That appeals, of course, to the move on, to the Occupy movement, to the Tea Party. We have all of these things in common. And we would repeal that so-called Patriot Act, that direct frontal assault on our civil liberties. It's been embraced by Obama, supported by Romney. We would repeal it, the National Defense Authorization Act, so-called, which is, again, a direct attack on our civil liberties. Anyone, you, me, more likely me, could be labeled to be a terrorist by the Executive Department. I could be detained, translation. I could be arrested, held without charges, ever deported to a foreign country. This is not what the United States of America stands for. We stand for its repeal. Roe Romney embrace it as their own. This appeals to these people. So we have so much in common. We have the answers. We are, Greg, we are in the mainstream of American political thought today. We're both financially responsible and socially tolerant. No one is going to accuse Obama of being financially responsible, and no one's going to accuse Romney of being socially liberal. We are in that mainstream. All we need to do is show that we're viable. And then we would win this election. Had we been in these debates, which are just about to wrap up now, we're still trying. We filed another lawsuit to try to get the governor in the last debate on Monday. But if we were seen as viable in those debates, we'd be the odds-on favorite to win this election because of that. Final comment on that regard is we will do something that the American people crave, and if they understood it's possible, they would demand. And that is we will put in a coalition government. No, yes, libertarians and independents highly placed in our administration, but also Republicans and Democrats, assuming that they agree with our approach of financial responsibility and social tolerance. And then can we have all of this bipolar politics going on, this selfish squibbling and stuff amongst themselves for their own political gain? We would have some of their colleagues in our administration go out and talk to the Republicans, talk to the Democrats. Hey, guys, get on board. This is a good idea. We'll give credit to anybody that has a good idea, anybody that embraces a good idea, and we'll actually join together and work for America instead of working for this selfish political self-interest stuff. So we will be able to do that. We're not in the debate, so our exposure is limited. We're going to continue to do this and put this to the American people all the way up till 2016. I'm committed to this man, Gary Johnson. He's the right guy. He's what we need, and by thunder, we're going to get him into office.
Well, you know, I've always liked libertarian ideas about drug laws and freedom, but I do have real concerns about how a libertarian economy would run, and it's probably just due to my own ignorance. But can you walk us through some of the major changes Gary Johnson and yourself would make in the economy?
Of course, and thank you. And today, like I was yesterday in Tulane University in Houston. Now, in New Orleans. Now I'm flying to Houston. But, you know, I greeted this group. Unfortunately, I think bad news. You're bankrupt. For every dollar today the federal government is spending, we're borrowing 43 cents. I don't care your political philosophy. You will understand that no company could possibly do this and stay in business. Mm-hmm. No household could possibly do this without going through bankruptcy. Let me tell you a secret. No country can either. I mean, we're Greece, and it doesn't help you to have your economy simply dive, because the biggest security threat to our country is a bad, failed economy, and that's where we're going. So we're going to have to actually have an audit of the entire federal government. We're going to have to reduce spending strongly. And so what are we going to do? We have that audit, which has never happened before, using generally accepted accounting principles, just like any public corporation is required to do that every year. We're going to do the same thing for the government. That includes the Pentagon, by the way, and they scream, oh, no, national security. We say, we're not going to give away any national secrets, but we're going to have an audit. And one of the things then that we're going to do is look at all the money we're spending of our troops fighting these wars all around the world. We've spent $1 trillion because of Afghanistan, and the answer is we can't afford it. We can't be the world's policeman. We simply, anything we can accomplish in Afghanistan, we have. We'll bring those troops home now. You know something, Greg? We are actually nation-building, fixing the roads and the schools and the pipelines of foreign countries halfway around the world. We're going to spend that money here instead. We need our own infrastructure to be fixed. So that's part of that 43%. We have military bases, Greg, something on the order of 900 to 1,000 military bases in foreign countries today. Now, we're not isolationist, I say. If any of those bases are necessary for our security, terrific. Reinforce them as far as that's concerned. But probably we could close down 80% of those without even scratching our heads more than once, because they're not necessary for our security. I swear to you that Germany is not going to be attacked by Austria in my lifetime. Let's bring those troops home. Station them in San Diego or Nebraska or New Jersey or whatever. Station them in our homeland instead of theirs. Again, they're necessary for our security. That's different. I actually read a magazine article about 2 months ago quoting a woman who lives in a small town in Germany next to a U.S. Army base. And she was horrified at the idea that we might close that Army base, but she said, oh, wait a minute, about 92% of the revenue from our small town comes from the U.S. Army. I say, you know, you're probably right, but we're going to instead spend that money in our home instead of theirs. So that's part of that 43% savings that we simply must do. And then we'll, again, conduct that audit of all of our federal agencies. For example, we have the Department of Energy that's now choosing winners and losers in the marketplace. Ethanol, you know, it's just maybe 10% of the gasoline we use in California, has been decreed by the federal government, Department of Energy. You have to use corn for that. Well, wait a minute. First of all, the corn crop, and I've been through Illinois, Indiana, the drought is severe. Why dictate that the corn be used for that instead of for feeding hogs and tortilla market and the rest? Instead, in fact, I was on a radio talk show out of Iowa maybe a couple of years ago, and a man called in and said, you know, I'm going to talk against my own economic self-interest, because Judge Gray, I raise corn. However, I'm here to tell you that an acre of hemp would result in a great deal more ethanol per acre than an acre of corn would, and corn will clog your carburetors and hemp won't. Well, it's not my field. I don't know. But let the market figure out which crop is best to use ethanol. We don't need the Department of Energy. It's counterproductive. It's inappropriate. We'll close it down. And that's a big saving. That's part of the 43%. It goes on and on. I would close down a whole lot of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, for heaven's sake. You know, you can talk to Native Americans, and I've talked to probably 50 in the last couple of years. You ask them the question, what do you think about the BIA? They despise it. I mean, wouldn't you, Greg? If they don't trust you to educate your own children, poor baby, we'll do it for you. Nonsense. It's insulting. We'll close that down. So we just look at things, we'll disclose everything very publicly and say, wait a minute, this one isn't working, this one's duplicative, we've got to reinforce our economy, because that's our security threat, and we're going to give an honest look to it and reduce that obese federal government simply doing things that are inappropriate. It goes on, but I think you get the idea.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Just the changes in ending the wars and the drug prohibition, I mean, that alone would do wonders for the economy and plug up some holes of just where we're bleeding money.
Let me again insert that,
sure.
We actually had in our initiative to regulate marijuana like wine. You don't have to listen to me. It was the language from the Attorney General's office that if we were to treat marijuana like wine, we would save tens of millions of dollars every year in enforcement costs. That's just for the state of California alone, and hundreds of millions of dollars would be gained by taxation. So we could use that money to pay our firefighters, pay our teachers, fix our highways. I mean, that's just one thing, but it's huge. It's just absolutely huge. The United States of America leads the world in the incarceration of our people, both by sheer numbers as well as per capita. And here I assure you that we're number one does not make me proud. We're ruining people's lives. In California alone, tens of thousands of people are in prison as we speak that simply should not be there. Very expensive pastime. Prison Guards Union, of course, is savoring it, and they're thriving. But mm-hmm. It's simply harmful. We can't afford it. It's inhuman. We're breaking up families, taking parents away from children, the rest of that. So let's focus on what people do and instead of what they put into their bodies, and then we'll be a lot more successful. So again, this is exciting, Craig. You know, this is the most exciting thing that's happened to me since the birth of my children. I mean, this is the right guy. He cares mm-hmm. about people. Again, I do too. I was in the Peace Corps. We're going to make sure, yes, we have a safety net for our people, but government will be the last resort instead of the first resort. But when it comes down to it, nobody is going to be starving in our state or country. Nobody is going to be bleeding or not have medical care. But government's the last resort instead of the first resort, and we're going to spend money, get a lot more value for that money, and really tear down this obese, intrusive federal government that we now have, taking away our liberties, et cetera. So again, it's just an exciting thing, and I'm proud to be involved.
Of course. What you just said is really, really important to me about the safety net, because I do worry on the federal level with the changes that you'd make with the drug policy and the military. I mean, that's going to decrease the deficit and, you know, stop us from bleeding money as a country. But individuals, I worry about some of the programs that libertarians talk about cutting, because without short-term unemployment or government assistance, how could I suddenly lose my job and not also lose my home before I found another one?
Well, I understand, and unfortunately, it was the government that really created this problem with the banking and the problem with the housing and the rest of that stuff, because we actually insured risky loans or loans that transparently were not going to take place. But once again, and just talk about health care, when it comes down to it, we're going to get the government out of our health care for people that can take care of themselves. Greg, I know neither you nor I wants the Department of Motor Vehicles to be monitoring and doing our health care. But when it comes down to it, again, if people simply cannot take care of themselves, we're going to have health care for them. We're going to put in, under at least as far as I am concerned, government clinics are sponsored by the government to provide medicines, nurses, and hospitals for people and doctors instead of administration, bureaucracy, and fraud. And, you know, if you can call it socialized medicine if you want to, but that will be the ultimate safety net where we're going to spend money on doctors and medicines, et cetera. And you can call it socialized medicine if you want to. I lived in a socialized medicine facility for 4 years. It's a great socialistic enterprise called the United States Navy, where I or my dependents can go to the naval clinic. We could get pretty good health care. And when it comes down to it, that's what we'll do. But today, and we've had this morass of bureaucracy, this Obamacare is increasing the bureaucracy, driving medical doctors out of the field, throttling our whole health care system. And the answer is no. And the answer is no. We will repeal that. But when it comes down to it again, I promise you, if I have anything to say about it at all, and I know Governor Johnson feels the same, we're going to have that safety net. The government will be the last resort instead of the first resort. It's going to work.
Well, let's actually discuss corporations for a minute, because this is another issue. I love that libertarians deregulate things for the individual, shrink the size of government, but they also get rid of some of the regulation on corporations. And it's my opinion that Corporations are moralists when it comes to their bottom line. That's why our food becomes cheaper and less nutritious. It's why at my day job, out of the 11 store managers in my district working 50 hours a week, running million-dollar stores, zero of them can afford to be homeowners. But do you really think less regulation on corporations and eliminating the minimum wage, which is something I've heard about, do you think that'll help the American people?
The answer is yes. Governor Gary Johnson, when he was the governor of New Mexico, actually streamlined regulations. Look, we need government, no question about it. We need regulations, but they need to be more user-friendly, understandable. I mean, you can look at these supposed regulations going back to the medical marijuana dispensaries. Nobody understands what they are. And I sympathize with the police, certainly the dispensary owners, and certainly the patients. Nobody really knows what to expect. They don't know what the regulations are. We will streamline them, make them understandable, user-friendly, and of course we need regulations. When Governor Johnson was in New Mexico, he did streamline regulations, and that resulted in the creation of more private jobs in the economy per capita than any other state. So, you know, again, we need regulations. I'm not going to go back to laissez-faire and say, oh, you know, corporations, bless your corporate heart. They will take advantage of a system, just like individuals will. We need responsibility. We need antitrust laws. I mean, that sort of thing. But they have to be streamlined, because bureaucracies, again, can tend to expand, tend to invade your privacy, invade your world, because they really need to justify their existence. And we need to pare that back. We'll still have it, but we'll have it more streamlined, more understandable, and more fair. In fact, if you're worried about creation of jobs, we have Obama and Romney literally spending hundreds of millions of dollars on their ads. You've seen them on television.
Greg, right.
Have you seen any of them that talk about their record, say, I'm running on my record? The answer is no. They don't have a record to run on. Are they talking about new and good ideas? No, they don't have any ideas. What they are only doing is spending hundreds of millions of dollars showing how inept the other one is. And honestly, we agree with both of them. They just don't have any ideas. The only idea they have is they want to be elected. We would, for example, repeal the income tax. Now, wait a minute. What's the connection here? We will bring in millions and millions of jobs, simplify our lives. Greg, do you believe that our income tax today is equitable, workable, and fair? You know,
no.
Nobody will say that.
In fact,
so,
I'm not. I've
so
seen.
What would we do?
Well, I was going to say, I've seen documentaries that say the income tax isn't even formally on the books as a law.
Well,
I don't know how true
it is. I'm not so sure of that. We do have the 16th Amendment. Some people say it was never ratified, but one way or the other, we would repeal the 16th Amendment and put in a retail consumption tax. Now, look, today our goods, for example, have a competitive disadvantage because they have paid taxes on them through the companies that make them before they leave our shores as exports. You know, income taxes, if they payroll taxes, et cetera, competing against goods around the world that have not paid taxes on them is a competitive disadvantage. Same deal in reverse. We have a lot of goods coming in from other countries, I don't care, Singapore, Japan, Argentina, whatever, that have not paid taxes on them, competing with our domestic goods that have, and then all of them pay the same sales taxes. If you were to repeal the income tax and have a retail consumption tax instead, you'd have all of the goods paying the same taxes, and it would level the playing field. Now, I was in an airplane recently sitting next to an executive from Nike, you know, the shoe manufacturer, who said, his eyes got big, and he said, Judge Gray, this is sensational. If we were to repeal the income tax, most companies would bring their manufacturing back to the United States of America. Translation, that means millions and millions of jobs. So it's a reverse outsourcing. But, wait a minute, wouldn't this, in effect, be a tax on the poor, unduly regressive on the poor? And the answer is Governor Gary Johnson will take care of that. For example, how much would this retail consumption tax be? I don't know. Let's say 10%. Probably be somewhere between 8 and 10%, mm-hmm. or 8 and 12%. If it were 10%, first of all, understand, Greg, that everybody that's working and receives a payroll check would no longer have any withholding for income tax, for Social Security. All of that money would stay in their pocket because it would be paid by the consumption tax, so people will have more money to begin with. That's a good thing. However, what about the poor? If Governor Johnson is in there, he will actually have a rebate to every adult in the country every month, say for an amount of $100. That means that if you spend $1,000 a month on goods and services, you'd end up paying no taxes at all. If you're really poor and spend less than that, you'll actually make money on the deal. So that will certainly take care of the poor. And then everybody will pay the same 10 cents tax on every dollar they spend over $1,000, Bill Gates on down. Now, I think you would agree with me that people that have money spend more money than people that don't, so they're going to pay a larger amount of taxes. It's really going to work. It will simplify our lives. You can make business decisions for business reasons instead of tax reasons. And by the way, there are numbers of companies that have mastered the system, have all these tax breaks for them. They don't pay taxes at all. Think General Electric if you want to. That would change that dynamic so that people actually will pay a lot more. It will be fair. People can make personal decisions for personal reasons instead of tax reasons. Now, the problem is that the Republicans and the Democrats will never put this in. Why? Because these people in Congress are absolutely adamant in keeping our present failed system because they get enormous political power by voting for tax breaks to their wealthy constituents. And that's across the board. All of them do it, and they don't want to give up that power. But when we win this election, we'll get such attention nationwide that people will absolutely watch this and see, and any of their elected officials that don't vote for this will be putting their selfish political interests ahead of the people's. We're going to say, you know, go talk to your representatives and straighten them out. This is something that will work for everybody and simplify our lives. There's a difference between simplification, which I certainly favor, and simplistic, which of course is not. This will simplify our lives and really make things work streamlined, increase jobs, and help really everybody across the board, except people like H&R Block. They don't like the idea. I think we can live with that.
Yeah, I like a lot of what you're saying. But something that really does concern me in terms of corporations is we have a system where limited liability corporations like Bayer, for example, this happened a few years ago, they can find that they have HIV-contaminated blood, and because it's more profitable, they can dump that on foreign markets and then pay the fine and still be trusted to put products on our shelves with nobody to hold accountable because of the limited liability. Is there any way to fix that? Because if a normal company with a normal owner had done something like that, they would not be in business anymore.
I've never heard that before. I think that's not only inhuman. That's something simply that should be prosecuted. That's a crime. Honestly, I've never heard that happening before. Maybe yes, maybe no. But the answer is anybody that does that, we would certainly release that information so fast. If the people of the United States heard that one of our companies was doing that, they'd go out of business because there'd be such outrage that nobody'd buy their products, and if they'd be violating any of our laws by doing that, we'd prosecute the devil out of them. But, you know, I mean, that's just outrageous. I don't have any personal information, but that's not going to happen in our world. We believe in responsibility at all levels. Again, let me tell you, I was a federal prosecutor for a number of years in Los Angeles.
Right.
And yeah, I prosecuted bank robberies and drug cases and stuff. I was a drug warrior back then. But I also ended up heading a unit prosecuting frauds against the government, you know, the FHA, the VA. I ended up prosecuting a lot of bank vice presidents. And most people don't do that because they can actually defend themselves, you know. But mm-hmm. So the success, supposedly success rate in prosecution is lower, but those are righteous prosecutions. I believe, Governor Gary Johnson believes, in responsibility at all levels of society. And the higher level of responsibility you have, the higher the level of scrutiny. And so we have people today, for example, in these banking scandals who are donating big-time donations to both Romney's campaign and Obama's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to expect payback at the end of the election. You think these people are going to be investigated and prosecuted? The answer is no. We will. And I'm not saying anybody's committed violations of law, but we're going to look into it. If so, we will prosecute them because we're responsive to the people. Romney and Obama, they're interchangeable. They're responsive to the private interests with regard to this and so many other things. This will be refreshing. You will be proud to have voted for and supported Governor Gary Johnson to the degree that, I promise you, everybody that votes for Governor Johnson in November will be proud within a year or two that they have done that, and 60% of the people that did not will truly wish they had.
I don't disagree with that. I can't understand how someone would even put an Obama sticker on their car after 4 years. It's like, what did you vote on him for? You know, if it was for getting rid of some of the secrecy in government, which he talked about, didn't happen. If it's for ending the wars, that didn't happen. Guantanamo Bay, that didn't happen. Soft on marijuana, that didn't happen. Pro-gay marriage, that didn't happen. What puts that sticker on your car now 4 years later? What did you get? It's kind of
frustrating. Well, my view is very much like yours, that no one with a half an ounce of understanding what's happened in the world and would vote for Obama unless they want money from the government. If they do, he's really good at that. He's pandering to the voters, using our money to pay for them voting for him. Romney is in so many ways the same. You know, it's just simply big-time politics. We are the voice of the people. And I know that sounds trite, but not only because of what Governor Johnson talks about, but what he actually did in New Mexico. You know, he ended up getting very high reviews for standing up for liberty, for keeping the government out of our personal lives, out of our bedrooms. You know, yes, we would close Guantanamo, a bleeding sore on the soul of the United States of America. I know Obama said he would do that right away. He did, kind of went through the motions, but he sure adopted it as his own now. You know, again, this Patriot Act that he has adopted as his own. We come at Obama from the left. We really do stand for liberal values. We really will get our military troops out of these conflicts all the way around the world. Both Romney and Obama, I saw these, and Biden Paul Ryan. They're almost out-machoing each other to see who's going to bomb Iran first. We say, no, we're not going to bomb Iran unless they attack us or our allies. We're not going to go to war with Iran unless they attack us or our allies or anybody else. We're going to declare peace. I promise you, though, that if somebody attacks us or our allies, they will truly wish they had not. But otherwise, we're going to declare peace around the world. Obama, my goodness, he's even talking about, I saw in the Times a little while ago, he's talking about putting our troops in Mali, for heaven's sake. Do you believe Mali is a security threat to the United States or
right.
Sudan or Yemen or whatever? The answer is no. So Obama is not the one with liberal values. He simply isn't. Gay marriage, you know, he came out at the end of his administration a couple of months ago, sending his vice president to meet the press to kind of opine, well, you know, maybe I'm rethinking this whole idea of gay marriage and the rest. I don't speak for the administration, but, you know, maybe I'm changing my thoughts. Let me sit back and wait and see what kind of a reaction it is. 2 days after that, Obama makes the comment, well, I'm kind of reconsidering this, but you know, it's a state issue. Translation, I don't have to do anything about it. 2 days after that, he was at George Clooney's house in Hollywood and raised $15 million, basically, from the gay and lesbian community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's pandering. He really believed that he would have done it at the beginning of his administration. And we say, wait a minute. We believe in marriage equality. It is the next step in the progression from racial equality to gender equality, and now it's marriage equality. It's a federal issue. It's a 14th Amendment equal protection issue. We will enforce it federally. So we don't. You can agree with us or disagree with us, but that's our position. You'll know what our positions are, and we actually believe this. Where Governor Romney, well, I know where he comes down on that, and I
right.
disagree with that. But Obama, I don't know what he believes about anything. He's just pandering to people, trying to get use their money, use their votes, but he doesn't stand for it. We do.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, libertarians seem to be about streamlining and simplification, but what about eliminating public representatives and voting online so that people don't have to worry about campaign promises being kept?
I think that those ideas, in fact, I'll take that 3 steps farther. And I'd never thought of this before, but on the campaign trail about 6-7 days ago, I had a man come up to me and say, you know, Judge Gray, when we actually began with our republic, that we actually had each representative from the House of Representatives represented about 15,000 people in his or her district. And now, of course, the number of the members of the House of Representatives stays the same as 435. That's not in the Constitution, by the way. But now, of course, they're representing hundreds of thousands of people. Why don't we go back to the original representation of having each representative simply represent like 15,000 people? I just quickly kind of thought in my mind, well, that would result in something like 2,500 members of Congress. I said, that's true. But, like you say, Greg, let's change this and allow them to stay at home and have a home office, and they'll do business on the Internet. Yes, they can conference with each other. They can listen to speakers. They can speak from home. They can vote from home. They can have another job along the way because they don't have to go to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And imagine this. If we were to do that, you'd have local representation. You could actually talk to your member of Congress and actually get a lot more responsiveness. And those lobbyists that are now in Washington, they'd lose their control because they won't be able to pigeonhole and talk to all of
right.
the people from Congress. They'll lose their influence. The people would gain influence. The lobbyists will lose influence because there'll simply be too many people that they can affect. It will result in democracy like we've not seen it in decades. I think this is a sensational idea.
Me too.
I'm just thinking it out, but it can work. You can vote from home, you can have another job, so you'll have to be realistic. You'll be a lot closer to the ground and the people and representation. I think it's a sensational idea.
Yeah, I think that's great too. I hadn't thought of that myself. And Judge, since you are actually at the airport now, what do you think about the TSA and some changes that might need to be made?
Goodness. I get infuriated. For a long time, I would opt out of this nude screening, as I call it, and I still don't know how much radiation's coming into my body, et cetera.
Right.
But then the indignity of them literally touching every inch of your body, first from the front and then from the back, I get so upset that I now go through the nude screening thing instead. But answer, Greg, is I'll give you two answers. And the first is that I was in line to go through TSA, actually in Orange County where I live, and I'm doing a lot of flying, as you can imagine. There was a young man ahead of me. He had a backpack on his back, and he had this little emblem, little badge on his backpack. My eyes weren't good enough to see. I didn't want to put my nose on his backpack, so I simply said, what is the badge? He said, I work for Homeland Security. I said, okay. I mean, they make you go through screening too? He said, yes. And I said, let me ask you a question. Is taking my shoes off going to make us safer on this flight? And he looked at me, smiled, and said something truly notable, which is, the grand illusion of security. Come on, it does not make us safer. You can look at me. In fact, since then, I've spoken to a guy that worked for TSA for 5 years. He was actually in civilian clothing and would kind of meander through people and see if anybody looked suspicious. And he said, Judge Gray, you can't imagine how much bureaucracy, how much waste there is in this TSA. So the answer is, we'll privatize it. We will do away with the TSA, privatize it, and give the security back to the airlines. They have a vested interest, Greg, in keeping us safe. To put it mildly, it's bad press if you have your airplanes falling out of the sky. So we will. You can hear I'm getting close.
Are you getting called?
We can do this. Sorry about that. The answer is that we will bring we will abolish the TSA, but privatize it and allow the airlines to oversee the safety. They will do it. So that's just one of the things. As you hear, I'm going to have to get on my plane.
Yeah, of course.
Greg, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Let me just close by saying that I appreciate the opportunity to discuss these issues. We do have answers. We didn't talk about health care, particularly immigration, which is a failed system. So I can say in summation that Governor Gary Johnson is the most qualified person to be president that I know of. I am really excited by this. The most exciting thing that's happened to me since the birth of my children. And I go back with a final quote to Thomas Jefferson. After we finally ratified the Constitution, was quoted as saying that, look, we're going to have a revolution every generation in our country to protect our fragile democracy. Why? Because the private interests will inveigle their way into power and sap our vitality and sap our strength. I deeply believe that the revolution is finally here. It's been so many generations, and it's here in the presence of Governor Gary Johnson and Judge James Gray. We will do things to bring back to our country that prosperity, that equal opportunity and freedom that literally is now skipping through our grasp. So thanks for the opportunity, Greg. Look forward to talking to you again soon, and good luck to us all.
Hey, thank you, sir. You won my vote. I urge everybody to go out, check their positions. I mean, I know this audience isn't voting for Romney or Obama, but don't stay home. There is an answer. Instead of just bitching from home on the internet, let's go out there and try to change things. So, yeah, I appreciate it. It's really been an honor. I appreciate your time so close to the election. I'd also highly suggest that Governor Johnson yourself reach out to Joe Rogan and Duncan Trussell. They've got some massively popular podcasts, and it'd be a good way to reach the people and combat the media blackout that you guys seem to be victims of. But thanks and best of luck, sir. What you were going to say?
Certainly, thank you, and just call my scheduler, and we'd love to do it. My life is not my own at the moment, but who my scheduler is, so call her, and we'll see what we can work out. Once again, thank you, and good luck to us all.
Perfect.
Bye.
There you have it, people. A vice presidential nominee in a national election taking the time to talk to us on the Silly Stoner Conspiracy Show. How can I not vote for him? I hope you feel like I used the time well and asked some good questions you care about. But seriously, guys, this is not a lesser of two evils situation. These guys really care. Of course, think for yourself, but I've been researching them all week. We can talk about the integrity of the voting system on another show, but endless cynicism gets you nowhere, and Gary Johnson and Jim Gray are brave enough to fight the battle for us if we're willing to spread the word, so tweet on, people. Here's a great track by a very talented band called The High Cell. It's called Underachiever. Don't be one, and I'll catch you later. Seacrest out.
Sympathy and adoration. I'm striving to achieve the status that they gave to me, and it seems I'll always be an underachiever. Achieve the status that they gave to me, and it seems always